Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Having a walk through the Welsh Hills today. It's quite windy, so I hope that doesn't interrupt the recording too much. While we've been walking up the hill, Pete's been telling me this really nice story of a poet that he heard this morning on the radio. So I just thought we'd share that with you and our reflections upon that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I can't remember the poet's name. Secondly, I can't remember the poem.
But you can remember the gist of it very well. Yeah. You were just describing it to me very, very beautifully, and there were some quite powerful statements in there, I felt.
It's one of the joys of old age. I can't remember names. So if I'm going to do these podcasts, I know all sorts of stuff about all kinds of things that are going on. But I can't remember who said it exactly, or if I do, I get the name wrong. And so it's just the kind of the joys of old age, really. You don't get encumbered with like detail and crap like that. No, it was on Twitter, and it was a poet.
Oh, sorry, Twitter, not the radio.
Yeah, it was on Twitter, and it was a video, and you clicked on it, and watched it. And it's a black woman from Bristol. And it was a beautiful poem about the pulling down of the statue of Edward Colston, the 17th century slave trader. That the youth encircled with ropes and pulled down. On Sunday, actually, this week. I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago.
It does.
But it's just
so
not even
much has happened since then.
It's not even a week. And they rolled it down the street and off the quay into the River Avon, into the water.
With great cheers,
yeah. It was a sublime moment. It's created a hell of a lot of furore in the UK.
And across the world, actually.
And across the world, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but it's one of those things that's revealed. It's one of those events that's revealed the nature of things. It's kind of shone a light on all manner of things. It's just like turning a light on. But I'm going to just tell you the way the poem affected me. This may not be what the poet intended. But nevertheless, I know what it did to me was convince me that the bonds which are holding us down, the chains which we must shake off, are incredibly flimsy. Now, it seems like we don't know what to do. We know we've got to do something, but we don't know what to do. It seems as though we're being held down by monumental forces. This poem illustrated that we're not. And the way that that statue came down, it took 30 seconds to come down. Which is, once it was down, the police decided not to intervene. Because it only took them 30 seconds to pull it down, and then what were they going to do? There's just going to be a lot of people got hurt in a kerfuffle. And but there was a bit in the poem towards the end where the poet describes the way a piece of the statue fell off or was broken off as it clanged it down off the pedestal. And she said, and it was just empty inside, just hollow. Because it's like a hollow statue, it's just made out of a skin, you know, and it was just hollow. And of course it is, it is just hollow. The stuff that holds us is just hollow. It's insubstantial. It's even less substantial than air. And this sort of chimed with the thought that I've been having and playing around with and taunting Nigel Farage and various gamonati with. And it's the thought that a lot of people live in symbols. They get enormous emotional attachments to symbols. The Confederate flag. The British heritage, so-called. And watching the fash on videos, like, just losing it. Over a flag or something. And I just tweet and say, it's just a bit of rag.
Yeah.
And it's because it symbolises. And it's a fetishised symbol. Symbolises something. But people very, very easily fall in love with the symbol and lose sight of what it symbolises. I mean, Nigel Farage down read his own fucking Twitter feed, I doubt, you know, but I said to him, you're just living symbols, man. You know, and it's a fetish. You're just fetishising all this stuff. It's not actually very healthy. And a symbol, even what it symbolises, is nothing compared with life itself. So we just come and dance under the open sky. It would be about fucking symbols. Come into the world of air and water and grass and birds and your skin and the warmth of your skin and the sparkle in the eyes of your beloved. That, just direct. Instead of getting your knickers in a twist, giving yourself a fucking hernia and a bloody stroke and an embolism through a completely irrational and fetishised attachment to symbols. And not only that, but the symbols, which symbolise...
worst aspects of humanity.
Yeah, thank you very much for providing the perfect words there, Anna. And of course, this is going on and on and on and on now. And this is why you get kind of culture wars, you know. People steamed up over this or that symbol.
This is why going after the symbols is actually quite a clever move.
It isn't. You can kind of divert... too much energy.
But it's a victimless crime, like it you is, mentioned. Yeah. So yeah. There's no crime yeah. against the person. I can't get yeah. steamed up about sort of yeah. deaths or injuries or anything
no.
like that.
Yeah.
But it's still potently
yeah.
attacking
yeah.
and bringing yeah. to light what these symbols yeah. actually are.
Now, when we did another podcast, which I don't we bothered to publish because it was a bit raggy, about and it's now out of date, but yeah. about...
We do a podcast and it's out of date 10 minutes later. There's much going on at the moment, yeah. isn't there?
But we mentioned in that podcast, or maybe in one that we published, I don't even know, you know, I don't have a job keeping up. But I'll say it again, is that it was great, the statue coming out, sublime moment, wonderful. And on the level of symbols. But at the same time, it's just a tin statue, it's just a piece of tin, what the fuck. You know, it's something more concrete eventually needs to happen. For now, great move. So I think you could get a bit dialectical about it, that it's extremely powerful and significant at the same time as being insignificant and just empty, all at the same time. You know, and you need to entertain both attitudes, in a sense, to it. Because at the end of the day, it's just a piece of fucking tin on the plinth. Fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be far, far better to storm Parliament and throw them all out on their ear and set up a people's council, you know, something concrete, or have a general strike.
Baby steps.
Or have a general strike, but yeah, baby steps.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful what it's triggered off in terms of gammon irritation, nationalist irritation. I mean, there's been a big call to take out a statue of Cecil Rhodes, who was an imperialist. Rhodesia was named after him, which is now the country's Zimbabwe, which was a white colony in which the indigenous black people were exploited to the nth degree. And Cecil Rhodes was a big British imperialist, to the extent that he gets a country named after him. Anyway, he got a statue at Oriel College in Oxford. The students and the academics have been calling for it to be removed for ages, and the authorities, they take no notice. And some big bod, whose name I can't remember again, some very senior professor from Oxford, comes on the radio, or is quoted on the radio this morning, as saying, oh, you can't erase history. Those statues are there to teach us history. You know, we can't erase it. You don't pretend it. And you shouldn't. You shouldn't appraise people of the past by our moral standards, you should praise them by their moral standards. And I thought, if this is a senior professor at Oxford, my suspicion that the place is not delivering education is confirmed. Of course, when you look at the cabinet, most of whom went to Oxford, and who are imbeciles, whose only talent is to turn a reasonably grammatical sentence, but nothing else. No capacity for thought or analysis or empathy.
Oh, they're very good at lying, though.
And they're very good at lying. Yeah. You think, what a fucking shithole. Why has it got the reputation that it's got? Fuck it. Give me Wolverhampton Polytechnic any fucking day of the week. So, fuck them.
But you said to him, well, why not, didn't you?
Well, this was somebody else. This was a Tory MP. Comes out with exactly the same thing. They're more or less copying and pasting this shit all around our social media. Oh, you can't measure them by our standards. You measure by that. So I want to knock that on the head immediately. For a start, a statue isn't history. A statue is not history. A statue is a celebration. Actually, that statue in Bristol was a big fuck you to the black people in Bristol.
Oh, yeah.
And 12% of Bristol's population is black.
Yeah.
And it was a big fuck you to them. There's no history, it's just a fuck you.
Yeah.
And they pulled it down. So, cool, good on them. You know, if you're going to keep saying fuck you to me, eventually I'm going to fuck you back. You know. And there's no history in it, it's just a fuck you. It could be, you know, I'd say, take it down, get it out the rear, put it in a museum, and do a very well worked out and truthful and detailed story around all the stuff that the bloke did. Including the philanthropy, and expose the nature of the slave trade, and the nature of colonialism. So rather than the thing being an erasure of history, it's actually bringing an aspect of our history into stark focus that has been deliberately blurred, namely, the horror of the slave trade. Okay, I know there's a museum in Liverpool and all the rest of it. But nevertheless, there's a certain amount of concealing goes on with these statues of imperialists and their celebration. So fuck you, Oxford professor, whoever you are. A statue is not history. Let's tell the history and include in the history the fact that people were incensed enough to pull down the statue of Edward Colston. And hopefully at some point, if you don't move, if Oriel College doesn't move Rhodes out of Oriel College and into a museum with the story being told.
There will be hell to pay.
Well, if somebody pulls it down, I will be clapping, let me put it like that.
Yeah.
So, piece of academic stupidity number one. Piece of academic stupidity number two. We can't appraise people of the past by our values and our morality. Yes, we can.
Yes,
why not?
Can.
Give me a... I mean, I just thought... I've seen this 100 times now over the internet, and when it's on Twitter, I just put, well, why not? Because I know the minute they try and erect an argument as to why we can't do that, that they're going to be in such fucking deep water and in such a muddle, because there is no reason why not.
Yeah.
In fact, we should. So I'll tell you why we should. I'll tell you why we should. Because we are not them. Why are we trying to... We can discover from documents and historical research what their contemporaries thought of them, what people of a later era thought of Colston or Rhodes, and we can work out what we think of them, you know. But if you think that the point is to reconstruct or rediscover what Rhodes' contemporaries thought of him, what's the point? We can do that very, very easily. Now, the point of us appraising Rhodes and Colston, by our standards, by our moralities and our values, is that it helps us, by examining the past, to figure out what kind of a future we want for our descendants. There's nothing like looking at the past and past horrors and past greatnesses and past achievements, which is what human history is. Humans are fucking terrible fucking creatures and amazing creatures all at the same time. We need to examine it, because it gives us some good material with which to make our own appraisals of what we desire for the future, for our children, our grandchildren and our descendants further on. And that is why you do appraise Rhodes by our standards, rather than just doing the kind of vapid intellectual exercise, which is ridiculously easy to do anyway, of figuring out what his contemporaries thought of him. If somebody who can't see that is a professor at fucking Oxford, I am right, it's a fucking dump, miseducating people.
Mm.
And that's why we got Boris Johnson and the rest of his shower of incompetent wankers.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that you get that comes out of this is people say, oh, well, it's an attack on our way of life. and our values and our history.
Oh, God. That's so pathetic.
And I go... Oh. My answer to that is, oh, well,
what way of life are they living? I mean, for heaven's sake.
Well, what I do is I put what way of life question mark.
Yeah.
I said, I think
that's pretty different from my way of life.
Yeah. Well, this is precisely it. I say, well, you're presuming And I don't think you can really, in all seriousness, presume this or presuppose this, that the British way of life is a sort of monolithic single thing.
No.
There's a million ways of life in the UK. You know, and they're all British. It's all being lived by British people, you know, people with British citizenship, born here, all the rest of it. You can gloss it any which way you like. There is no British way of life. There are 10,000 British ways of life. So on what grounds are you claiming that one of them's the real British way of life and the rest are not? And again, you can ask that question, you know, and get your popcorn out and think, well, I'm just going to watch them dig a fucking hole for themselves here, because there's no way of arguing it. The stupidity that this thing has revealed amongst you know, the deep racist past and all the rest of it, brought it all into a much sharper light than it was in before. Another thing is just like how much fucking stupidity passes for thought and journalism and scholarship even. You know. So yeah, it's great. At the same time, it's just an empty symbol. Stop living in symbols and we'll get somewhere. But the revolution, I mean, is symbolic acts in some ways, but it's also a very concrete act. Recently found out that really Trotsky won the Russian Revolution with 1,000 people. He figured it out. We only need 1,000 people to win this revolution, but we take over the post office, the water supply, the electricity supply, the newspapers, and you know, all the key, the sort of dozen sort of key items of the system, the kind of node points in the system, and that's it. Did it with 1,000 people. It took one day. All the storming of the Winter Palace, well, that was theatre. All the pulling down of the statues, it's theatre. It's useful. I mean, we need the world to explode in debate.
Yeah.
Even if a lot of it's half-baked. But at the end of the day, it's something concrete. So I kind of like Yanis Varoufakis's idea of, you know, say, if you could organise this, even that would be a tall order, but if you could organise it, say every Monday or every first Monday of the month, nobody buys anything from Amazon. Or that we reverse engineer all the collateralised debt obligations and find out where all our water bill futures are or our electric bill futures. Do you know that people sell the expectation that we will pay our electric bills to companies and speculators and stuff like that, futures in it? And that we figure out all that and then we don't pay it. But you don't have to kind of like bring society to a halt. We just do it now and then so that they know. It's very, very concrete. Some very, very concrete things can be done. Keep pulling down the statues, yeah, but some very concrete things can be done as well. Well, I think that's a nice short rant for our friends.
Yeah. Well, I hope you found that interesting. Some food for thought in there. And we will be broadcasting some more thoughts about the interesting times we are currently living in soon, I imagine. Stay safe, everyone. Speak to you soon.
Make knowledge great again. Wash your hands. Lots of love.